I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Keely Clary. Clary, Ms. Clary graduated from Kent State University in Ohio, where she received an undergraduate degree in chemistry and her master's in public health. She is the return on investment epidemiologist for the Maricopa County Department of Health in the great state of Arizona. Her talk, South Central Neighborhood Transit Health Impact Assessment, Expanding Light Rail to an Underserved Population.
Thank you, Fran. Can everybody hear me okay? Well, thank you all for being here today and joining me, and thank you to CSTE for this opportunity to speak with you. As Fran said, I'm going to be discussing a health impact assessment that we recently completed in Maricopa County. And this is looking at extending our light rail system of transit to one of our underserved populations in South Central Phoenix. So I'm going to be covering a background on what an HIA is. Sorry, a health impact assessment, HIA. The role that Maricopa County Epidemiology played in this recently completed HIA in Maricopa County. And then briefly touch on some of the key points of the demographics and data highlights that kind of swayed and really pushed forward our recommendations from this process before I get into some lessons learned. So to start, is anybody here familiar with health impact assessment or had an opportunity to participate in one? Awesome, okay. Well, for Arizona, it's a recently new tool, and it helps evaluate a plan, policy, or project and formulate recommendations that better inform policymakers prior to implementing that plan, policy, or project. So they're a scientific and community-driven process that utilize a collaborative approach to formulate these recommendations. And overall, the overall intent of an HIA is to inform and influence decision makers, help address inequalities in health, promote collaboration at all levels. As I said, this is a very community-driven process, just as it is, as much as it is a scientific process. So input from all levels is very crucial, as well as encourage sustainable development. So the analysis is going to look at all aspects of physical, mental, and social well-being health factors and the predicted health outcomes that may result of that, whether they be good or bad. I'll get into these a little bit more in the next few slides, but there are six major steps to a health impact assessment, and these are screening, scoping, assessment, recommendations, reporting, and then monitoring and evaluating. And each of these are going to help answer the question of how does the health impact assessment and the proposed policy plan lead to health outcomes. So now I'm going to get into some details of the health impact assessment that we recently completed and the process that we went through as the Office of Epidemiology and that role that we played. So with a population of nearly 4 million, Maricopa County makes up 60% of Arizona. Zooming in on Maricopa County, you can see Phoenix here, kind of highlighted in green on the screen. but Phoenix actually makes up a third of Maricopa County's population with 1.5 million residents. So currently in Maricopa County, we have over 20 miles of existing light rail, and these selected routes were based upon highest ridership, highest areas of student population, highest areas of social events, such as sporting events and any civic activities, as well as the potential for connection to other cities. If approved, this study area, or I'm sorry, the project that's under study would extend the light rail 5 miles south of our downtown stop into this area it's an oval. On my screen, it's kind of pink. I'm not sure what it looks like for you guys, but that's our study area. So zooming in onto that study area, again, this is in our south neighborhood, south central neighborhood, just south of our downtown major region. In the blue, you'll see where the existing light rail would connect. In the black, you'll see where the extension is proposed, as well as the proposed stops. And our study area is going to be a mile radius outside of that proposed line. Because this was a small area analysis, we really had to be selective in what data sources we utilized. So things like behavioral risk factor surveillance system aren't going to be beneficial. However, things such as hospital discharge data and vital statistics data, where we have that resident's actual address, is going to be beneficial because we can narrow it down to our specific study group. So So we wanted to know how extending the light rail could potentially affect the health and quality of life of residents within our study area. So briefly looking at demographics, some of the existing health conditions within the area, and then what access to resources do they have? And is there anything that potentially limits them from getting to those or hinders our residents from getting to those resources? And then finally, using this information to identify barriers within the community and help formulate appropriate recommendations that could increase public health while limiting some of those bad outcomes that could come from this project. So as I briefly mentioned before, there are six major steps in a health impact assessment. I'm going to go over each one briefly and then the role that we played within each of those steps in Maricopa County. So the first step is the screening phase, and this is where you as a practitioner of the health impact assessment are going to really look at if you have the capacity to actually pursue this project and if there's a need for it. So for us, following the approval of a proposed light rail extension project, it was decided that a health impact assessment would serve well for our Valley Metro, which is Maricopa County's transit authority. It would serve well for their environmental assessment plan, as well as provide a great opportunity to form those decision makers that are going to be on that board. During the second stage, this is the scoping phase, an insight committee is going to be formed. And this is where you're going to consider your project strategically and identify who, what, where, how, and why the HIA is being conducted, and propose objectives for that HIA to accomplish, as well as identify any indicators that you'd like to follow. Our insight committee was composed of our lead agency, which was Maricopa County Public Health, as well as a number of partnering agencies. So we worked well with Valley Metro. And then we also hired an evaluation group, Saguaro Evaluation Group, that we used to conduct all of our focus groups and key informant interviews within the community. And it was during this phase that epidemiology began conducting a secondary data analysis of existing data, so that we could determine some of the objectives that we wanted our health impact assessment to accomplish. In the third phase, the assessment phase, you utilize qualitative and quantitative research methods to find the baselines and potential future impacts of each indicator that you've identified. And these could include both risks and benefits. So during this phase, the Office of Epidemiology did additional secondary data analyses within our insight committee groups, and we were able to identify vulnerable populations such as low income and those with a chronic disease burden were pretty prevalent within our area. We also created maps so that residents could understand this information visually. By interpreting and presenting this data within the insight committee, we were able to push the assessment phase forward, providing light on some of the issues that are currently going on within their community, many of which the Insight Committee members were already aware of, but really seeing the data in front of them helped make that come to life and realize that, you know, it's not just a thought, these are really issues that they are occurring within their community. And it also sparked additional interest. So a lot of follow-up requests came from this data where they wanted to know more. And we actually had to formulate specific data sessions outside of our committee, outside of our registered committee meeting, so that we could cover some of this more in-depth data that they had questions about. The fourth stage is recommendations, and this is going to use your assessment and your scoping phases to really formulate some recommendations that you could that you can give to policymakers and decision makers to improve the public health outcomes of this proposed project, as well as alleviate some of those unfavorable outcomes that could potentially arise. So using data as a driving force, we are able to assist the insight meeting into making measurable recommendations. And for each recommendation, we made sure that they were able to identify an agency that was responsible for that action. The fifth stage of an HIA is the reporting phase. And we're actually still wrapping this phase up right now. But this is the phase in which you convey to the decision makers, as well as your community members, the process of the HIA, the findings that you've found, all the recommendations that you've come up with. And this final report, once we have it done, will be presented with Valley Metro's major presentation to the board when they take their proposal for the extension of the light rail. And the sixth phase in the HIA is to monitor and evaluate. And this is going to be an ongoing process. So this involves analysis of the HIA as it was conducted and the impact that it had upon decision makers. And it also monitors the identified indicators that you found throughout the process of your HIA and how your recommendations are doing along the way. So as it sounds now, we have conducted a survey, an end of HIA survey with all the Insight Committee members to get their feedback. So we have picked up on some things that we could have done better. We try to jam a lot of information into each of our sessions, so there's some things that we can work on moving forward. So that's just an example of some of the analyses we've started to do on the evaluation portion. But as I said, this is going to be an ongoing process. So as we wrap up the report, before it gets presented to decision makers, and as it gets presented to decision makers, we're going to be able to evaluate how that impacted them. And then again, monitor any of those health indicators that we've identified. So our timeline for completing our health impact assessment was originally 15 months. It's closing on upon 2 years now, though, so it's a bit longer than our goal. And the scoping and reporting phases really took a bit longer than we had anticipated. Outreach was done to the community members as well as community service, a variety of community organizations, such as community service organizations, community committees, faith-based organizations. We were really just trying to get anybody on board to participate in the health impact assessment that we could. So in addition to community members, we were able to get 11 other agencies to partner with us and work on this health impact assessment. The Insight Committee members met once a month from September of 2013 through June of 2014 for a total of 10 sessions. And there were also key informant interviews that we conducted. Again, this was that outside group that we partnered with, the Saguaro Evaluation Group. They conducted all of our key informant interviews. And these were conducted both within the study area as well as in an identified neighborhood along the existing light rail line that matched the demographics pretty closely, so that we could get an idea of some of the input from small business owners, police enforcement, as well as organizations, how things have changed and how the process went throughout the construction of that light rail. In addition to that, community focus groups were conducted to collect additional information within the community, as well as surveys that were all passed out at community events and gatherings. So the surveys collected data on health, chronic disease, walkability, transportation habits, housing, and safety. So as I briefly mentioned before, there was an overwhelming amount of data. So we did schedule two additional data sessions that were specific just to covering this information, and that was outside of our scheduled Insight Committee member meetings. And this really allowed us to get into some of the specific questions that they had and kind of address some of the safety concerns that they had, show them some maps. In particular, we looked at crime data. We also looked at crash data with pedestrians, bicyclists, as well as motor vehicle. And then we also looked at dog bites in the area, and we were able to map those out for them so they could see some of the intersections and hot spots of their community where some of these safety issues were a big concern. All of our demographic data was obtained utilizing Esri Business Analyst. And this allowed us to upload our study area shapefile, and we were able to pull American Community Survey directly specific to our study area. So all the data that we're going to cover for demographics represents 2012 estimates specific to our study area. So the study area was comprised of just a little under 60,000 residents, and we found that Cynthia area residents were 25% more likely to reside in rental housing than those residents of Maricopa County as a whole. And they're also a bit younger. The median age of our study area was 6.6 years younger than Maricopa County. Everything to the left of that black dotted line is going to represent the race. Again, these were obtained with American Community Survey. So this is going to be the race that each resident identifies themselves with. In Maricopa County, roughly 80% of our residents identify themselves as white. In our study area, 47% identified as white, and 32% identified as other. To the right of that black dotted line, we looked at ethnicity. And this is ethnicity regardless of race. So of any race, whether or not they identify themselves as Hispanic. In our study area, a third of the population identified as Hispanic. For Furthermore, 43% of our study area residents did not graduate from high school or receive an equivalent high school diploma. They were 32% less likely to continue on to higher education. Taking a look at some of the economic indicators, roughly 37% of area residents bring in a household income of less than $15,000 compared to just 11% of Maricopa County households. So overall, the median household income was 59% lower than that of the county. And nearly 30% of households within our study area fell below the poverty line in 2012. Furthermore, our study area residents are much more likely to be transit dependent, 21% more likely to rely on the transit to get themselves to work. And this was further validated within our community focus groups, with 49% of participants reporting that they did not have a vehicle to get to work. So now we're going to look at some of the existing known conditions within our study area. Again, we used hospital discharge data to do this, as well as vital statistics data. And for this analysis portion, we're looking at a 3-year aggregate period from 2009 to 2011. The overall rate of hospitalizations among Cynthia area residents exceeded that of Maricopa County by 66%. There's no way of saying for certain, but this could be an indication that area residents have a hard time getting to primary care visits, such as preventative care and those routine visits that may prevent some of these chronic conditions. Furthermore, during our focus discussions, it was clear that people with chronic diseases often skipped their office visits because they didn't have transportation to get to these, or they didn't have money to take public transportation to visit. So this graph here shows the top five leading reasons for hospital encounters within the study area, with the number one reason being injury and poisoning. Aside from injury and poisoning, you can see that these other four may be a further indication that these area residents aren't getting to their primary care visits as much as they should. A lot of these are going to be preventative reasons. If they were getting to those visits, that might limit some of these. Perhaps some of the most alarming difference were between complications of pregnancy and childbirth, as well as in mental disorders. Mothers within the study area were 52% more likely to experience complications from childbirth and labor. So during one of our data sessions, this really brought alarm to our community members. So during one of our data sessions, we looked more in depth at this, taking a look at some of the pregnancy risk factors within the area. And we were able to identify that 35% of study area residents were not receiving adequate prenatal care. And furthermore, 83% of all births were covered by ACCESS, which is Arizona's Medicaid program. And then looking at mental health disorders, at a rate of 45,000 per 100,000 residents, the mental health hospitalizations due to mental health disorders are 280% higher within our study area than they are within the county as a whole. Taking a look now at death within the study area, the overall age-adjusted death rate within the Cynthia study area is 34% higher than it is in the county. And this graph again shows the top five leading reasons of death, with heart disease being number one, at a rate of 206 deaths per 100,000 residents, compared to a rate of just 139 per 100,000 residents in the county. So this shows us that heart disease is 49% more likely to cause death within our study area. Again, with the exception of unintentional injuries, these other four reasons up here could be a further indication that our residents are really having trouble accessing preventative care services and primary care physicians. And taking a look at diabetes, Cynthia area residents were more likely to die because of diabetes, 114% more likely, with an age-adjusted death rate of 42 per 100,000 residents, compared to Maricopa County's 19.6 per 100,000 residents. During some of our focus groups, as well as our Insight Committee member meetings, it was brought up that adequate shade structure is not prevalent within the study area, and this is really going to hinder some of them in their health, especially during the summer months in Phoenix. I'm sure you're all aware it gets really hot. I think today it's going to be 113, a little different than here. So we wanted to take a look at this for them, and so we were able to present this within one of our data sessions. And although it wasn't one of the leading causes of death, you can see that it's a much different rate than it is in the overall county. exceeding that of the counties by 470%. So in this next section, I'm going to cover some access to resources such as healthcare and healthy food. So we took a look at some of the hospitalizations that occurred within our Cynthia area residents, but how are these being paid for? Well, you can see in the graph that 60% of all hospitalization encounters throughout our study period were paid for by a public insurance, so our access program there in Arizona, which is Medicaid. This is 20% higher than that of Maricopa County. And if you recall briefly earlier, I stated that when looking into some of the pregnancy risk factors, 83% of births were covered by access, so this is a similar trend. The next two maps are going to show examples of some of the maps that we displayed within our insight committee meetings, excuse me, as well as in our data sessions and our focus groups. So the first map is going to show the availability of healthcare opportunities within the study area. And looking at it, it seems that there is a lot of opportunities available, but keep in mind that 21% of our population within the study area are transit dependent. And during our focus group sessions, 35% of participants reported that they use public transit to get to healthcare visits. It was also brought to our attention that even with the extension of the light rail, members and community members were not sure that they would be able to get to healthcare providers due to economic barriers. We had 45% of females reporting that they had trouble affording transportation costs, as well as 38% of males reporting that. So this second map is going to look at access to healthy food options. And for this analysis, we interpreted grocery stores as a reliable source of healthy food. So each grocery store is going to be surrounded by a half mile radius on the map there. So the circles that are gray, that represents a half mile radius around each grocery store. So while it appears there are plenty of food options within the study area, less than 3% of those options are grocery stores. And 60% of those options are either fast food or retail. And retail includes things such as gas stations, convenience stores, dollar stores, many of which do sometimes offer healthy food options such as fresh fruit and veggies, but it's not a reliable source. So in viewing these maps, community members did feel greatly that expansion of the light rail would help them access more healthy food options. And this was further validated in our focus group studies, with 38% of focus group participants reporting that they use public transportation to access healthy food. So Office of Epidemiology did assist with the Insight Committee members in formulating and shaping their recommendations. We made sure that these were based upon the data that we presented and ensuring that outcomes were measurable and that we could identify an agency that was responsible for these actions. There were 41 total recommendations that came from this project. While I don't have time to go over all of those, I'm going to briefly touch on some that relate to the data that I shared with you today. So the first one, they wanted to explore unique opportunities to increase shade, making the neighborhood more walkable to and from proposed stops. They wanted to work with community-based organizations, businesses, the City Department of Parks and Rec, as well as street transportation to meet or exceed a goal of 25% canopy coverage by 2025. And this is, again, going back to the prevalence of heat deaths within the area and the concern that there's not a lot of shade structure that's adequate for summer. Looking at number two, as you recall, most hospitalization visits were covered by Medicaid. So it was important to focus group members and community members alike to get out the word that many of, or just to get out the word in general, that Medicaid and Medicare both offer transportation health care. They offer ways to pay for your transportation and healthcare, so you can get reimbursed if that's the way, if you use public transportation to get to their visits. But a lot of people were not aware of that, so making the recommendation to do more outreach and make them aware of that. The third recommendation on the board then was to look at nonprofit hospitals. Many of them are required to provide community benefits with any of their profits. So if we could encourage them to use a portion of this to defer some of the transportation costs for those area residents that can afford transportation, but they're not on Medicaid or Medicare. The fourth priority, noting that many of our area residents are of low income, there was a concern for gentrification. If this light rail were to be extended into their area, they would be scared that they would be pushed out due to new developments, things of that. So they wanted to make it a priority to enforce that affordable housing and mixed-use, mixed-income housing developments would be put up. And looking at the fifth recommendation on the screen, many community members were not aware, but Valley Metro actually has a Valley Metro reduced fare program that provides 50% discounted rates for qualified individuals. So the recommendation was made to engage landlords, to especially those of low-income tenants, to encourage eligible individuals to apply for this program. And lastly, with 35% of our focus group members reporting that they use public transportation to get to healthcare, and another 38% reporting that they use it to get to healthy food, they wanted to make the recommendation to encourage and incentivize both medical care facilities as well as farmers markets to locate along the light rail. So while collecting primary data is beneficial to any project, epidemiology was really also able to strengthen this HIA with our secondary data analyses on existing conditions. Insight committee members were able to learn more about their study area. As I said before, many of this they were already aware of, but seeing the data there really brought to life and knowing that those are truly barriers that they are going under. Next, it was a very well-received project. Within the community, many people appreciated the opportunity to be a part of this project, knowing that their input and their thoughts really were helping to shape the recommendations and that they had a voice in this project. And that went both ways. We felt the same way about them, being able to work with the community, getting a feel for what their needs were, what their thoughts were on this project. After all, they're the ones living and working within this community. So that was a very valuable input that we could have and was very sought after. So we are very thankful to them for their participation. However, it is important to keep them engaged. So we had a lot of participation at the beginning, and because it was such a drawn-out process, we started to lose interest. So we found that sending out friendly reminders a week before the meetings, kind of going over the agenda and encouraging them that, you know, their input really does matter, and we really wanted to use that to strive forward with our recommendations, help to get them to come, and also providing dinner, because who doesn't like a free meal? Secondly, kind of along that same note, it's kind of hard for epidemiologists. We get kind of entangled in all the data, and there's so much information. We get excited. We want to share it. But I would recommend staying with some key points if you get the opportunity to conduct a health impact assessment, remembering what the community's needs are. Kind of go over some of those key points and allow them an opportunity to then ask questions and kind of shape and direct where you go with your further analyses. Because along those same notes, as I said, we did conduct then additional data sessions that we hadn't initially planned for, but it worked out really well. We got to go in more in depth. It provided us with more time, efficient time, that we could actually explain and interpret this data and really address some of the questions that the community members had. And then lastly, completing a health impact assessment, the steps and the process is not always going to go as planned. A lot of times it's going to take much longer. So when you are planning one, make sure you account for this. As I said, we originally thought we would be wrapping up in 15 months, and here we are 2 years out, still completing our report. We were fortunate enough to have that much time. The final report that Valley Metro is going to be presenting is not going to be until the end of the summer. But a lot of health impact assessments aren't going to have that, so make sure you account for the time and keep the process moving. All right, so just some acknowledgments to my co-authors, and as well as my office and all of our partners, and especially the community members, just everybody involved in this project. It was truly a collaborative effort. Okay.
So you talk about light rail, and I'm not really sure what you mean by
okay.
that. Is it electric? Is it diesel? Is it gas? And did you look specifically at asthma rates in that area? And then the third question, was anyone even opposed to this extension?
Okay. So I apologize for that. I should have explained the light rail. It's basically above ground subway system. It has its own lane, so it runs on the street, but it's not a street car. So it is electric. And the second part of that question, I'm sorry.
Did you look at asthma?
Yes. We did look at asthma data specifically. There was so much data we looked at, and because my presentation wasn't really focused on the data, I had to just kind of pick some key points. But asthma rates were higher in the study area. We sort of anticipated that, but they were. So we did look at those as well as many other things, and I'd be very happy to share any of those with you. If anybody wants to email me, I would love to elaborate. But yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, electric cars. And it would also do away with some of the bus systems that were going, so I think it would actually make the air cleaner, but that would be a whole other study.
And then was anyone opposed?
There were. Like I said, it's a very low-income population, so kind of gaining the trust of the community and even to look at this project, they were kind of hesitant because they're very scared of gentrification. They've seen the way that our downtown has developed, a lot of high-rises going in and, you know, more expensive housing, and they don't want to be pushed out of their neighborhood. They've been living here for so long. They love it. The social cohesion was really strong. So, yeah, there was definitely some pushback against it. I think by the end, most of them were kind of coming on board that this could be beneficial, but I think that's always going to be a fear because no matter what our recommendations that we do, there's always a chance that gentrification could happen.
Mm-hmm.
We do actually. We just started a new health impact assessment that's kind of in the same neighborhood. It's a little bit wider, and it's going to be the top half of this. But we're getting a lot of the same community members, and we're also getting ones that aren't within the study area, encouraging their friends that are to participate. So then this next one that we're doing is looking at a shared use agreement to share school grounds, or basically open up our school grounds after hours so that children have a safe place to come play because there's not a lot of parks in the area. But again, we'll be looking into shade structure and all the other issues that would come along with that.
Do you see any use, within public health as far as going out for the food season and things like that, keeping the communication going, and now that there seems to be more of a trust built?
I do.
Public health?
Yeah, I do think it would be beneficial. We've actually started engaging this community with, we have a project called our cooling centers. So we've been pushing out just education, pamphlets and stuff to let them, so that they're aware of those opportunities that they have to kind of beat the heat and get out of there. So that's been, it's made that process really, really easy within that community to engage them and get that word out. Not everybody knows about the cooling centers, even though they're all over our county. So I think starting, you know, with the community that we've built this relationship with and expanding out is going to help us. So I think, again, yeah, with things such as vaccination, it could do the same in other components of public health. Any other questions? All right, well, thank you guys so much. It's really been an honor to be here.